to the Sharp 600, brought to you by Carvers.com. I'm Rob Cressy, and I'm super excited to jam with you. And joining me today to help you get ready for NFL Week 4 action is Al McMorty, a.k.a. Big Al. You can follow him on Twitter at BigAl_com. Al, great to have you on the show.
Great to be here, Rob. How are you doing today?
I'm doing absolutely fantastic, and what I'm so excited about to be jamming with you is you bring a very unique perspective to the world of sports betting, more specifically on your process, and you'd mentioned to me that you are a situational or a technical capper, and starting with that, can you give a little insight into sort of what that means and how that manifests itself in your process?
Well, sure, Rob. So there's different ways folks can handicap football games. Some people are fundamental. They would look at player versus player matchups. Other people might have their math models. You know, what I like to do is I like to look at situations. And specifically, I'm looking at how do teams do off big wins? How do they do off big losses? Off back-to-back, straight up and against the spread wins. How do teams do after playing three high-scoring games in a row or three low-scoring games in a row? And, you know, it's really endless, the number of situations that you can look at. But what I found over the years across all sports is that teams tend to react similarly in certain situations. So it lends itself well to handicapping and, you know, to be able to, predict the results.
And one thing that I found extremely interesting is you mentioned to me you don't watch games, follow players or teams outside of injury reports. And for many people, we love red zone fantasy football sports betting. Like, we literally could not get enough of it. There's people who will tout that. I watch more football than anyone on the planet yourself. And then you're coming in being like, I don't care about any of this. So take us into that sort of perspective, because I love how detached that is in a good way.
Well, you know, first of all, I grew up a huge sports fan, and, you know, I've gambled my whole life. I've gambled since I was 12. I've been handicapping since I was 12. So I've been handicapping 43 years. So I've watched games my whole life, as a fan and as a gambler. I'm a huge San Antonio Spurs fan, so I would watch their games literally twice a night. I'd watch the replay as well as it live. But, you know, now as I'm older, I don't really watch the games now for two reasons. One, I'm extremely busy. I have to run my website, bigal.com. I've got 20 handicappers there to manage. I've got a staff of journalists that put out, 20 articles a day. I've got thousands of clients, and I can't, I don't have the time really to spend watching games. And then the other reason I don't watch games anymore is it really doesn't confer an advantage to me when it comes to handicapping. So I'll watch, the last 2 minutes of a game when I've got a bet on it. And like, I watched the end of that Baltimore Ravens, Detroit Lions game the other day. I watch it as a fan, and I watch it, for the fantasy and all that. But when it comes to handicapping, it doesn't confer an advantage. I'm looking at numbers, I'm looking at situations. And one of the things, it doesn't do me any good if I'm watching the Atlanta Falcons and I see that they lose 32-6. And then I'm going to be, my mind might be poisoned the next week if I want to take the Atlanta Falcons. So I don't need to watch the games because, there's no advantage to it, really, especially when I'm just looking at situations and numbers and I'm looking at what's your scoring margin, what's your defensive point per game average. I don't need to watch a game for that. I'm just looking at the numbers after the fact.
So this sort of goes to recency, because you'd mentioned, hey, what happened last week or 1 month ago doesn't matter because I've got 42 years of data. So can you dive a little bit deeper into that? Because certainly football has evolved over that time. And I want to sort of understand better how 42 years of data is as relevant today as anything else would be.
Well, sure. And again, every handicapper does things differently. So the way I do things isn't necessarily the way another situational or technical handicapper does things either. But, for example, last week, my big play was on the Rams against Tampa Bay. And that was based on basically a defending Super Bowl champion system I have that had basically, 100% of the time over the last 42 years. And, I don't need, and even if it had lost last week, then it would have still been, in the 90s, percent range. So, I'm just looking at long term. So I like, how do Super Bowl teams do in certain situations, or defending champs do, off wins, off losses, et cetera? How do teams do the week after playing a defending Super Bowl champion? How do teams do the week after playing a team where they had playoff revenge the previous week? So that's kind of the stuff that I do.
And how do you, I guess, process to know which data points matter? Because I think one of the things that a lot of sports bettors get caught up into is trends. And we can make numbers say whatever we want them to say, but what really matters? So whether it's a trend around Super Bowl teams versus teams coming off of double-digit losses versus home dogs, that how can we be more unemotional about it as opposed to trying to spin something where someone throws out a 26-4 stat to where all of a sudden you're like, well, I'm just going to take that because I see that. And obviously what you're doing has more layers to it. But I think on the surface, a lot of us will see a trend, and that's the reason why we may blindly bet something.
Well, I'm not a big fan of trends at all as far as team-specific trends. You know, I'm much more into systems that involve the entire league. You know, how do NFL teams do off, 30-point wins, for example? That's where I approach things. And it just comes down to the numbers, and it comes down to, the larger the sample size, the better it is, of course. If it's something that has a small sample size under 40, then it's going to have an extremely high percentage. But, I'm looking for larger sample size events, and that's how I approach it. And then I think there's also a skill that's involved. I've been doing this for 42 years, and I probably am a lot better at recognizing what the good situations are when it comes to the NFL situations than other handicappers.
So speaking of situations, there's one that we'll call it a travel myth. And I want to see if you can add some clarity to this on the teams traveling west to east or east to west, because there's a lot of narratives that we see. It's like, oh, the Raiders are going to go take on the Jets. So all of a sudden they're flying from this. And then maybe they were playing somewhere on Monday night. And we see this travel as if it's Clark Griswold getting into his camper with his family and driving cross country to Wally World.
Yeah, I'll walk you through how this all came into the gambling sphere, whatever you want to call the gambling arena. So this was back in 2008. And back then, the teams that were on the West Coast, the Cardinals, the 49ers, the Raiders, et cetera, the Seahawks, they weren't very good. They weren't bad, but they also weren't very good. And they started out that year 0-14 straight up on the East Coast. And they were a little bit better against the spread, but they weren't winning the games on the East Coast. So that actually made its way onto the NFL Today show, with Terry Bradshaw and the gang. They were talking about how the West Coast teams weren't winning on the East Coast. And that's how it first got into the public consciousness, was back then. But of course, no one ever cared to look at the data, except me. So I went back and I looked all the way back to 1980 and I researched how do teams do, the West Coast on the East Coast. And I, had to research all the, daylight saving times rules and when states change from, one to the other, because some states came, into that at different times than others. So I was, I made sure that my data was precise. But basically what I found was that the West Coast teams actually cover the spread on the East Coast and, in the Eastern time zone. And, back then it was like about 55%. Since then, it's been about 57%. When you look at it, how it's done the past, 42 years, I think the record's 345 and 294 ATS, the West Coast teams, play on the East Coast. And I was watching that Daily Wager show. I had never seen it before. It's a show that's on ESPN. It's a gambling show. And I watched it about a week ago. And they were talking about the Raiders coming off the Monday night game against Baltimore, now traveling to play Pittsburgh on a short week. They want to go against the West Coast team traveling. They were talking about the 49ers coming out to Philadelphia. They want to take Philly because it's the West Coast team, coming out east. And it just was driving me crazy because, they just don't have access to the data that I have. And so this is a very common myth. It's probably my biggest pet peeve going right now in NFL handicapping, is that people throw this out there all the time and they have no understanding that actually the West Coast teams do fairly well on the East Coast. I would never take a West Coast team because of it, but, you can't base your East Coast pick on that fact, because the West Coast teams are covering about, 55, 57%.
Are there any other common myths that we as sports bettors fall into that you may be privy to and be like, wait a second, that's a false narrative?
Yeah, there's another one. This isn't as big a pet peeve of mine, but the look ahead situation is another great example. You know, people say all the time, we're the sandwich gang, you know, that stuff. There's a lot of evidence that teams have letdowns. Okay. There's absolutely no evidence that teams look ahead. And certainly that may be harder to define because you have to say, you know, what is a look ahead game? What is a rivalry game? What is a big game to be looking ahead to? But what you can do is you can take a look at, you know, try to be objective about it. You can say, okay, how do teams do the week before playing the defending national champion in college football? How do teams do the week before playing the defending Super Bowl champion? They actually do quite well. It's funny. I actually was looking at this this morning, so I took a look at the numbers. The week before playing the defending national champion, 249 and 189 ATS. The game before playing the defending Super Bowl champ, 332 and 313 ATS. So, and then, you know, I've also looked at it other ways. I've looked at, you know, taking the biggest rivalries in college football and saying, how do Auburn and Alabama do the week before playing each other? How does Ohio State, Michigan do, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? And there's absolutely no evidence that the teams don't play well the week before. And then it's a little noisy, but there is some evidence that teams actually play better. As I actually just kind of showed you with the, you know, defending national champions, where it's a substantially better the week before that game.
So if we were to actually believe in the bias that a team is looking to head, I would have to believe then the coach who is built on focus. Like all coaches every day, it's like, what can we do to win this play, to win this game, for this game play? And there for him to be like, listen, guys, today I'm only giving 75% because Alabama's next week. So we're just going to do 25%. Like that just doesn't make sense to me from a, if you know anything about high performing people, which would make me believe, all right, now we need to think about the players. So are the players, when they're lining up, saying, I'm not giving up as much effort right now because I'm playing Alabama or Tampa the next week? And to me, that just doesn't make sense. And if you sort of break down what does looking ahead mean, it means that your effort isn't the same because your focus is somewhere else than it is right now, which doesn't seem to make sense.
It doesn't. And actually, and given that the numbers tend to be slightly higher before these big games, I think you can try to make some sense of that as to why it is. And I think what might happen is, you know, you've got this really big game the next week, and you know, you might lose that really big game the next week because it's, you know, two juggernauts going at it, right? And or maybe you're not even as good as a defending champion. So you might want to try to get this game this week because you've got this bear of a game the following week. So that might be what's going on here. But people don't think that way. They say, oh, this is a bad spot for this team. I'm going to go against this team because they might be looking ahead. But there's no evidence that the teams play worse. And in fact, there's some evidence they actually play better.
Yeah, I mean, if I was going to take a page out of high performance, what I would say is you would want to be better the game before you play Alabama or Tampa, because the last thing that you want to do is be coming in at 85%, knowing that they're always rolling in at 100.
Yeah, it's anyway, but it's interesting just to hear these narratives and these myths. And those are a couple myths, you know, and I'm sure there's a lot if we thought about it.
So I'm curious some of your thoughts on this week's game. I know you mentioned to me before we started that there's not a lot of situational stuff going on this week. And can you sort of expand on that a little bit?
Well, you know, for me as a handicapper, I like to look at unusual events, you know, a team coming off a big blowout loss, you know, and maybe looking for them to rebound, you know, if it's the right situation. But what's happening this week, as bad luck would have it for me as a handicapper, is a lot of the teams coming off, for example, you know, big losses like Philadelphia, you know, they lose 41-21 on Monday night. You know, it's not the right situation to take them this week. And there's a lot of teams coming off wins, for example, you know, the Chargers coming off that big win against Kansas City. Well, who are they playing this week? Unfortunately, they're playing a team that's 3-0 straight up, you know, the Raiders on Monday Night Football. So you have a lot of that going on where you say, oh, geez, I'd love to go against this team in this situation. Unfortunately, they're not playing the right team to go, you know, for me to go against them. So it's just one of those deals where there's just not a lot for me as a situational handicapper this week. I've got a lot in college football, but in the NFL, it's, you know, as I mentioned to you before the show, it might be the worst week, is not including week ones, which are always kind of skimpy, but you know, it's probably the worst week I've seen in maybe 25 or 30 years.
So I'm curious on your thoughts on the bottom end of things. So, so far this year, teams with rookie quarterbacks have been terrible. Certainly the first round ones with the Jets and the Jaguars, and the Patriots. And what is your thought process around teams that are typically the worst? We look at the Jaguars taking on the Bengals, 7.5-point dogs. You got the Texans that are sitting here, the number 16.5 right now, taking on the Bills. How do you, and you seem very pragmatic about it all, whereas we're so much more emotional. We see, oh my God, Trevor Lawrence has been terrible. Did you see that pass that he threw? That was the worst. Or Davis Mills is starting. So we feel it a lot more. But these numbers are always so much bigger. So what are your thoughts on the bottom end of teams and sort of how that process is for you?
Well, you know, I'm one of those guys. I'm never afraid to take the worst teams in sports. In fact, I do it all the time. I'll throw out a statistic right now. Winless teams are 240 and 176 ATS in non-division road games. You know, that applies to the New York Giants this week. It applies there's a few teams it applies to. You know, I think the Jaguars, I think, are in a great situation this week. You know, get to Cincinnati Bengals, and you look at teams at game four forward with a win percentage less than 200. Those teams are 15-4 ATS as underdogs of more than 7 points on Monday and Thursday night. So you've got these, you know, awful teams and high profile games, but they actually do quite well, you know, under the spotlight. And then if the line, it's 7.5 right now, but if the line gets up to +8, if it ticks up another half point, then that situation is 12-0 ATS through the last 12. So that's something to keep an eye on. If you can get the Jaguars +8 or more, it might be a really nice spot to step in and take them.
What I like about what you're saying is I think about a team like the Minnesota Vikings, that they start the season 0-2. They're a team that many had going to the playoffs. And then all of a sudden, boom, they go and they get a victory against the Seahawks. And now you're sitting there. The Vikings are taking on the Browns. Browns 2.5-point road favorites. And we're so emotional about the Vikings because of Kirk Cousins, because anyone who's ever bet on the Vikings one way or another, when you've got them, Kirk finds a way to lose. When you're betting against them, boom, here comes the 2-touchdown Adam Thielen game. So for you, is a team like the Vikings where they could just as easily be 3-0 as they could be 0-3 or 1-2? How do you think about a team like that?
I've got a kind of a weird way of looking at teams like the Vikings, who started off 0-2 and then win that first game. Atlanta Falcons, another team that comes to mind. They start off 0-2, looked awful, then they win that first game. And I kind of think of this as almost like the first impressions die hard syndrome. I think a lot of people think of that, still think of those teams as 0-2. Like, they did win that third game, but they still have in their minds, oh, they suck. They, you know, they got killed the first two games. But when you look at week four underdogs that started off 0-2, then they win in week three, they're 50-21 ATS when installed as an underdog of 7 or less points in week four. That applies to the Falcons and it applies to the Vikings.
Well, as anyone who has bet on the Falcons, there is nothing comfortable about betting on either of those teams. And speaking of discomfort, you're from Pittsburgh, I'm from Pittsburgh, and we'll now go on the flip side. We got our Pittsburgh Steelers, boom, week one. They beat the Super Bowl contending Buffalo Bills. People are like, you know what, this Steelers team, they're a double-digit win team. They're super healthy going into their second game. Next thing we know, TJ Watt out, Devin Bush out, Joe Hayden out. And for the last two games, the Steelers have looked absolutely terrible, losing to the Raiders and to losing to the Bengals. Ben Roethlisberger looks completely immobile. Now they're taking on a Packers team, which was actually the opposite. They get smoked the first week, taking on the Saints, and we're just sitting here with all of these emotions on Ben Roethlisberger's terrible. Well, the Packers were terrible, but now they're good again, so now we believe this, and we're trying to figure out emotionally how to believe how we're dealing with all of this on teams that have gone from Super Bowl contenders to terrible in the matter of 2 weeks.
Yeah, you know, the Steelers, I mean, they're one of those teams that I'd like to like this week. I just can't do it. And when I take a look at how road underdogs do off back-to-back upset home losses, they don't do very well. 7-20 ATS, very small sample size, but they don't bounce back in that situation. The Steelers also, compared to Green Bay, I've got a rushing yardage system that applies to Green Bay that's hit 67% long term. You know, Green Bay's got a much better rushing team than Pittsburgh does. So I'd like to like Pittsburgh, but you know, Green Bay off that first game, they still, you know, I think have a negative scoring margin this year, and it's just not the right situation to step in and take Pittsburgh plus the points. I won't take Green Bay either, but I'm definitely not going to take Pittsburgh.
As a Steelers fan, I just want to like watching the Steelers, but the last 2 weeks has not been the case, and it's unfortunate when you sit there in week three and all of a sudden the product you see on the field, that apathy sets in, because you can see when the Bills have Josh Allen and boom, they've turned things around, and now all of a sudden you're sitting there with Ben Roethlisberger in a porous offensive line, and you're like, there's no solution to this. Like, Anthony Munoz isn't just sitting in the wings, and neither is the young Ben Roethlisberger, so it becomes difficult. So Al, is there anything that I didn't ask you about week four, or thoughts that you have that you can share that might be able to help us on our journey?
Oh gosh. That's a curveball I didn't expect. I don't know.
Or a thought you want to leave us with. It can be sort of anything, because the challenge and the blessing in this conversation is, because you're so system oriented, which is something that I love, that I feel like I want more of in my life, because I like how specific you are in your reasoning. Whereas I can sit there and I'll look at a specific game and be like, oh, I'm going to give some reason if I don't want to bet on Matt Ryan, or how in the world could you take the Saints because Jameis Winston can just throw an interception at any time. So emotional, but I like the lack of emotion and the amount of logic that's in what you're doing.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's not a week four thing, but I would just say to anyone listening that you have to, the recency bias is real. You can't look at a team's last game and say that team sucks or this team's great. Just remember, a team's never as good as its last game or as bad as its last game. And you have to, you know, take a step back. And, that's probably the number one theme that gamblers need to learn.
I absolutely love that. Al, where can everybody connect with you?
Well, you know, my website's bigal.com. So folks can always, you know, go there. My email address, bigal@bigal.com. So I'm easy to find.
And Al, I got to show you some love for that website address, because when I was like, he got bigal.com, I was like, it's only five letters, which is absolutely a holy grail of URLs. Well,
what's interesting, 95, and you know, back then at the start of the internet, the trend was everyone had long URLs, you know, John Smith's Upholstery Company.com. That's how people, you know, it's like the exact name of their business, and that's what they would do. And for whatever reason, you know, it's not like I was smart. I just says, I'll just do, my company back then was Big Al Sportsline. I could have done BigAlSportsline.com, but I just said, let me just go, you know, BigAl.com. And I think the reason I didn't go Big Al Sportsline was because you had the two S's together. So I just said, that's not going to work. So I'll just go BigAl.com. And, so it works. But then the flip side is that, you know, when someone sees BigAl.com, they have no idea that it's a sports handicapping company.
But that's okay, because all they got to do is follow Big Al on Twitter, see all the amazingness that you have to offer, and go from there.
Now you say you'd like to talk about bets each week that you ask your guests to
offer.
So, right?
Yes. So one of them is called Pick a Loser. And the goal of this bet is to identify a losing bet. And the reason we created this is to think differently. How can we break the pattern interrupt, similar to what you'd mentioned about recency bias? Hey, what can we do when you see a team who's terrible one game? All right, the next game, you may want to be betting on them. So I'll actually lead with this. My pick a loser for the week is the Cleveland Browns -2.5 at the Minnesota Vikings. And the reason for this is last week we were on the Vikings, because the Vikings are a team who plays significantly better at home than they do on the road. And we're getting points here. So for me, I would like to fade the Browns as road favorites. So the Browns -2.5 are my pick a loser. What about you?
Well, I'm gonna go with the Chargers coming off that 30-24 win over the Kansas City Chiefs. That's a division upset win. Division home favorites. Not only they stay within the division for this Monday nighter. Division home favorites are 72-109 ATS off an upset division win. So it's tough for teams to get those back-to-back division games. I think, again, I'm not in love with the Raiders side of the equation either, because they're 3-0 straight up. And obviously I think they might be due for a fall as well, but I definitely want to go against the Chargers off that huge upset win.
I love that. So the next thing is get comfortable being uncomfortable. And for us, that's taking a bet that is gross. When you see there, I think a great example of that would be somebody who wants to take the Texans plus 16.5 taken on the Bills. You do that and you're like, I don't feel comfortable whatsoever. And for me, I'm going to give my uncomfortable rating a Carl Mecklenburg, the albino rhino, a 77 out of 100. Give me the Denver Broncos in a pick 'em taking on the Ravens. And the reason for this is it is uncomfortable because you're just picking which team to win. The Ravens are a team that you believe could beat anyone there. But I like the Broncos at home. I like what I've seen so far. The discomfort comes from who they've played so far in their schedule, which doesn't seem like many people. But I really like the Broncos defense in this game to find a way to win. So for me, my uncomfortable bet is the Broncos in a straight pick 'em. What about you?
You know, this is tough for me because I'm never uncomfortable taking anything. But
of course.
I might go off the grid here. I am, let's say, less comfortable taking parlays. I'm not a big fan of parlays. So I'm going to do a parlay. That's probably something I would be uncomfortable with, generally speaking. But I'm going to move it. So it's going to be adjusted line. So I'm going to take the Colts. I'm going to try to take two teams that are winless. I'm going to take the Colts. I'm going to move it to plus 4.5. And then I want to take... let's go with the Lions and move that to 7.5. And that's what I'll do.
Awesome. I like that. And then the last thing that we have here is the Big Mick Moneyline Parlay of the Week. And the goal of the Big Mick is just to produce a winning bet, because someone hit me up on Twitter and said, Rob, can you give me a winner this week? And I'm like, yeah, I wish I could do that all the time. Life would be much better. So I put together a Moneyline Parlay that won for him. And therefore, the Big Mick Moneyline Parlay of the Week got created. It's a nice, simple bet. Once again, just a way of designing different ways for us to think. And I'll actually allow you to start with this. Do you have a Moneyline Parlay that you would like to throw out?
Yeah, you know, I'm going to take two situations here. There's one team I want to go against, one team that I want to go with, but not with the points. It's only with the money line. One's going to be Kansas City Chiefs. You know, the Chiefs, everyone's well aware that they're not covering the spread lately. Now they're coming off a loss. It's the first time they've had a losing record in like 6 years, right? So I really like the Chiefs to win. They're minus 330, 320, that range, whatever, straight up against the Eagles. And when you take a look at teams in week four, going back to 1987, teams that are winless against the spread, as Kansas City are, those teams are 10-1 straight up when they're favored by 7 or more points, which Kansas City is. So I think Kansas City has an excellent chance to win this game straight up, given everything surrounding that team. The other team that I'm going to put with them is going to be the Dallas Cowboys. This isn't really a play on Dallas so much as it is a play against Carolina. Carolina coming into this ballgame 3-0 straight up and against the spread. But when you take a look at what teams do when they're 3-0 straight up and against the spread, and in week four they're getting more than 3 points, they do, trying to think what the numbers are, I think it's 0-12 straight up when they're facing a team that also isn't 3-0 straight up and against the spread, which Dallas isn't, because Dallas lost that week one game. So I think I'm going to go against Carolina, so I'm going to take Dallas on the money line parlayed with Kansas City on the money line, and I think the odds when you do that is going to be minus 108.
Awesome. I love that. On my team, I'm going to keep things nice and simple. I'm going to do a four-team money line parlay. Give me the Bengals, the Bills, the Chiefs, and the Bucks. And what I did last week is said, all right, who's going to blow this up for me? And thankfully, the Lions almost destroyed everybody's money line parlay. But do I feel comfortable on the Bengals? No, not particularly. I could see, not that I am in love with the Jaguars, but let's get something on Thursday night. Bills, I'm just throwing that in because that's just some extra money to get the odds up there. On the Chiefs, I'm on that as well. They're a team, they have not been covering much at all, but I still believe that they are not going to lose three straight games. And then with the Bucs, Tom Brady is going to find a way to win that game one way or another. So give me the Bengals, Bills, Chiefs, and the Bucs as my four-team Moneyline Parlay.
Well, let me ask you something. What are your thoughts on when you do your Moneyline Parlays when one game is a standalone game and, you know, you've got hours or days in between that game and the next legs of the parlay? Is that something that you think is necessary or unnecessary?
So it's a great question there because I'm an entertainment bettor. So I'm different than a lot of people where I'm an action junkie, where there's a Thursday night football game on, boom, I want to get that. Obviously, I would rather not have Monday night be sitting there where I'm doing this entire way where it's eating up my bankroll. But if I'm doing this from an entertainment side of things, it gives me a vested interest to be able to keep things going. Of course, I would love to have this done by the 1 p.m. games, but it's almost not in my periphery other than, you know what, maybe I don't want to be betting the Monday night game as the bookend on my Moneyline Parlay. But other than that, you know what? I'm cool with it because I'm caring more about the fun side of things, which I know is different than most people.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I like that answer.
There we go. So Al, really enjoyed jamming with you once again. Where can everybody connect with you?
Just go to my website, bigal.com. And if you want to reach out, my email address, bigal@bigal.com.
And I want to hear from you. What is on your NFL Week 4 card? Do you have a pick a loser, a Big Mick Moneyline Parlay, or a get comfortable being uncomfortable bet of the week? You can hit me up on Twitter @RobCressy. Also, make sure to tag @Covers. And remember, if you want to be a sharp, don't be a square with your bankroll. Be disciplined with your money management. The Funkadelic Devil hit you with the rap level of 10. The 1, 2, 3, your pen. I get action. So everybody jump with your rump. If you like the way the sound pump, pump it in your back trunk. And let loose with the juice when I do rock. I'm too hot. Some say I got more juice than Tupac.